We did a video about, I'd like to say, 2 months ago, and we explored the documentary Weight of Chains, which is a fantastic documentary, which goes over the history and the breakup and the war that was waged against Yugoslavia, and then after that against Serbia. And in that documentary, there's about maybe a 5-6 minute part where it starts going over all the warmongers, the criminal political element that was involved in deliberately destroying Yugoslavia, then deliberately destroying Serbia, not only for political reasons, but I would say more so for economic reasons in order to enrich themselves. The same racket that everyone's watching this video understands when you go for regime change and when you go to destroy a country and to take their assets, the neoliberal model, so to speak. And one of the people that was highlighted as one of the ringleaders of the entire effort to destroy Yugoslavia and Serbia was Senator Joe Biden. A lot of people sometimes focus on Madeleine Albright, and she was terrible, no doubt about it. Madeleine Albright, of course, Bill Clinton. But Joe Biden was one of the frontmen in destroying Yugoslavia and attacking Serbia. Joe Biden was also one of the frontmen in Bush's Iraq war as well. And there's a lot of information that you're going to give us now as to how he went about his business there by waging war against these countries and then profiteering from these countries.
Well, this is exactly what he did. I mean, this is exactly what Joe Biden apparently, and I'm not just talking about Joe Biden, we're talking about all of these people that you've been talking about. They break they defeat the countries. They engineer regime change in those countries. And then they go into these countries themselves, either directly or through their various protégés and sponsors and members of their families or whatever. And they extract very large sums of money from them. And this is something that, of course, none of them say in advance that they're going to do. They never announce or tell the American people that they have an interest in this. They never say that, you know, they have a financial interest, that they want to see Yugoslavia broken up, or Serbia defeated, or the government of Serbia overthrown, or the government of Iraq overthrown. And at the same time, they personally intend to or stand to benefit financially from it. They never say that. But that is, of course, what invariably happens. And as you correctly said, Joe Biden was an arch hawk, an arch war hawk at the time of the Yugoslav wars. And he was an arch war hawk at the time of the Iraq war. And it turns out that he has done very well for himself out of this, especially, it seems, out of the war in Iraq. He's done extremely well. There are reports circulating now that we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that have been moving in his sort of direction. Now, that is something new in the history of the United States. I can remember the Vietnam War, and I do not remember anything like that happening then. I mean, there was a war in Vietnam. Many people opposed it. Some people supported it. But in no sense did you get the impression that people were coming from the United States to enrich themselves at the expense of the people of Vietnam in this utterly cynical way. And it happens all the time. It's happened in Serbia and in the Balkans, not just Serbia. Serbia in some ways is just because it's retained a semi-independence, but other parts of the Balkans to an extraordinary degree, Kosovo to an extraordinary degree, Iraq to an extraordinary degree. It's also happened in Afghanistan, and Afghanistan where trillions of dollars have gone. But Joe Biden, if we're talking about Joe Biden, apparently the big one with him was Iraq.
All right, let's... Before we move to Iraq, I want you to go a little bit deeper in Iraq. Let me read you something from James Jatras, who did a piece on Biden's involvement in Serbia and Iraq. And let's just tie up Serbia because, man, Biden was, I mean, this guy was just I don't have the words to describe the animosity and the hate that he had for Serbia. And I don't know if it was tied to the fact that he saw an economic windfall there. But anyway, this is what the this is what James Jatras says in the article, one paragraph here. Joe Biden was the primary sponsor of the March 1999 Kosovo war authorization for military action against Serbia and Montenegro, the resolution 21. As a little remembered historical note, Biden's resolution might be seen as the last nail in the coffin of Congress's constitutional war power. While resolution 21 passed the Senate, it failed the House on a tie 213 to 213 vote, with Republicans overwhelmingly voting nay. It didn't matter. Bill Clinton was reeling from the Lewinsky scandal and went ahead with the bombing campaign anyway. The ensuing 78-day NATO air operation had little impact on Serbia's military, but devastated the country's infrastructure and took hundreds of civilian lives. Even now, more than 20 years later, Serbia suffers from elevated cancer levels attributed to depleted uranium munitions. For Jihad Joe, as he was called, Jihad Joe, even that wasn't punishment enough for people he collectively demonized as illiterate, degenerates. I'm not even going to say the rest of those words that he, and these are direct quotes that he called them. Viewers can see it on the screen. This is what he called the people in Serbia. In May 1999, at the height of the NATO air assault, he called for the introduction of U.S. ground troops. We should announce there's going to be American casualties, followed by a quote, a Japanese-German style occupation. People forget this about Joe Biden. He was a neocon war hawk to the extreme.
Yes.
Alexander.
That is exactly right. Note also that he was also, I mean, and by the way, I mean, he was very close to the Clintons at this time. And of course, Bill Clinton was tied up with the Lewinsky scandal. So you know, he was helping out the Clintons too, to some extent. But there we go. I mean, this is the Biden that we are talking about. A man who supports wars, a man who undermines the constitutional role of Congress, because that's what the resolution that he proposed shows. A man who wanted to escalate the war, who wanted to introduce ground troops, something which Bill Clinton, by the way, was not prepared to do. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton did hold back from that. And a bombing campaign that was directed very much at the civilian infrastructure of Serbia. I remember that war very well, and I can remember it extremely, you know, the whole bombing war, remarkably well. And it's absolutely a fact. It did not actually affect the Serbian military very much. I mean, they were dug in, they had an effective air defense system, and they were able to come through that 78 bombing war with remarkably little damage. But Serbia's civilian infrastructure was devastated. And of course, there were some extraordinary acts taken, which were, well, I would say there were war crimes. One was there was an attack on the major television building of Serbian television in Belgrade, which was an attack essentially on journalists and journalism. Fact that people don't much notice, but it was a deliberate targeting, as far as I could see, of the media people there. And then, of course, there was the attack on the Chinese embassy, which has never really been clearly explained, but which was came at a very critical moment in China's development and was certainly used by hardliners within China to push a more anti-American agenda. Now, that would probably have happened anyway. I don't want to give the impression that that made history, but it was nonetheless an extraordinary thing to do.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Yugoslavia and Iraq, and then we'll get into Iraq a little bit, is that when they attacked Yugoslavia, and I'm looking at Jatras's article, and it's really interesting, because when they attacked Yugoslavia and they occupied Kosovo, a lot of people don't realize that Kosovo was essentially open for business, much like Iraq was open for business, in that they occupy this territory And then, as Jatra says, lavish aid subsidies from the US and the EU start pouring in. And he actually makes the statement, Jatras, and he says that Kosovo was one of the biggest per capita foreign assistance recipient countries in the world. Tiny, tiny, tiny Kosovo was one of the biggest per capita foreign assistance recipient countries in the world. And Madeleine Albright made out really, really well with the telephone company, the PTK telephone company, which was originally a state-owned Yugoslav firm as well. And so they got the firms, they you know, broke them up, they sold them, they many times they would sell the parts. Money was coming in from the US government to occupy these territories and all kinds of aid packages and subsidies. This was not only specific to Yugoslavia, but also to Iraq. And this is how all these politicians made a killing in these regime change operations in these wars.
Well, that's right. And note, by the way, that Biden wanted that occupation extended throughout Serbia and Montenegro. In the event it was restricted to Kosovo, but he wanted it extended throughout the whole of what was left of Yugoslavia. So, and, you know, Kosovo was a poor province. The really juicy bits would have been in Belgrade. He didn't manage to get those. So they didn't manage to get those. Now, can I just make an additional point about that war? What isn't widely known is that, of course, in advance of that war, there were negotiations, I think in Rambouillet in France, between the Serbs and the Kosovans and the Europeans and the West, in which basically the Serbs actually agreed to most of the proposals that were put to them in order to settle the conflict that there was in Kosovo. And what then happened was that the Western powers, when they saw the Serbs might actually be looking for a diplomatic and peaceful way out of the conflict, they then escalated their demands. And at that point, they asked for, in effect, an occupation of the whole of Yugoslavia, which, of course, the Yugoslavs refused. I mean, they couldn't not but refuse. And there was then this 78-day war, which was supported by Biden in this extraordinary inflammatory language. The military side of it didn't go very well, but eventually what happened and the way it was settled was that the Western powers quietly returned to the proposals that had essentially been agreed at Rambouillet. So they went back to what the Serbs had originally said they would agree to. Then, of course, they sent their troops into Kosovo. And then they broke the agreement. They broke the whole basis of the agreement that they had reached and the UN Security Council resolutions that followed, which had insisted that Kosovo would remain a province of Serbia. That was in the Security Council resolutions. But they simply violated those.
Yeah, and perhaps the biggest... biggest destruction of a country occurred in Iraq and the Iraq War. George Bush's Iraq, and Biden was a huge, the biggest supporter of that war from the Democrat side. I mean, he was perfectly aligned with the Dick Cheneys and the John McCains and all these guys. The initial costs, they said, of that war the U.S. government and the military estimated that it would cost $60 to $138 billion. Obviously, we now know that it wasn't anywhere close to those figures.
Yes. And of course, it didn't just destroy Iraq. It also led to the creation of all these terrifying terrorist movements, not least of which was ISIS. And by the way, that was completely predictable and was not just predictable. It was predicted. I mean, people who were familiar with that part of the world. I can remember back in 2002, listening to all sorts of people who knew the region, academic people, people who'd studied it, people who traveled to Iraq, people who would go to Iraq, and they would say, yes, Iraq is a terrifying dictatorship. Saddam Hussein is a brutal dictator. But don't go there. Don't invade the country. If you invade the country, it will fall apart. There will be chaos and terrible things will come out of it. You know, this is absolutely not something you do. You may think that Saddam Hussein is a terrible man, but that doesn't give you the right to invade his country. And it does certainly doesn't give you the right to overthrow him in the way that, you know, they did. That, you know, George Bush and Tony Blair, let's never forget him, did. And not just Tony Blair, but, you know, Tony Blair's fellow neoliberals, Biden and co. They all wanted to see it. Without their support, it would never have happened. I can well remember that some of the most cogent and effective opponents, both in the United States and in Britain, were conservatives. Obviously, in Britain, there were left-wing figures like Robin Cook, who, you know, who was a former Labour cabinet minister who left the Labour cabinet to oppose the war. But there were also conservatives like Kenneth Clark, who had, you know, at one point been the conservative chancellor or finance minister. And in the United States, the most articulate people who opposed the war, the most consistent opponents of the war in Iraq, were conservatives also. And the reason they opposed it was because they sensed that it was wrong, both you know, on legal and moral grounds, but they also sensed that it would end in a debacle for the Western powers and for the United States. And I also remember that the most vigorous and vehement supporters of the war, both in Britain and in the United States, were people on the neoliberal left. Tony Blair and his various acolytes, including most of the media, including most of the left-wing media in Britain, and of course Joe Biden and people like him in the United States. They weren't just the most vehement, they were the most ferocious.
Yeah, true statement. It always comes from the neoliberal left.
Yes.
The neocons and the neoliberal left. And now they've dropped all their masks and they've just kind of merged into one, which is why the neocons completely support the Biden campaign, all of them across.
The neocons who are not conservatives, let's be absolutely clear about that. They're not interested in conservative. They're not people who support conservative policies or principles or values. They support a very aggressive foreign policy, which they want the US and the Western powers to follow. And if that comes with a radical leftist domestic policy, they're fine with it. They don't mind if it means, you know, all kinds of constitutional innovations in the United States, which we've discussed at length in various programs that we have done. They're not bothered. That's not their concern. They're not interested in countries like the US or Britain. They're interested in what goes on in other countries that they want to see changed. And why do they want to see them changed? Well, for many reasons, obviously, because they're playing their various intricate geopolitical chess games. But in the case of many of them, and we've seen that now, there is a vast economic benefit also for them personally, which again was something which at the time in 2002 we didn't know. And here I'm afraid there is still a huge amount of uncertainty and lack of clarity, because we're only now starting to get the true feel for what went on in Iraq after the invasion happened. But, you know, I've heard things now from people, well, from information coming out, that hundreds, thousands of millions of dollars went out of Iraq after the war. And much of that money ended in the United States and Britain and places like that. And all sorts of people benefited. And there's been suggestions that one of those was Joe Biden. And the extent to which that happened is just off, you know, on a scale that dwarfs what we've talked about in other broadcasts about Ukraine, about, and of course, Yugoslavia. I mean, it's on a completely different level to that.
Yeah, that's why we do these programs. And of course, we haven't even gotten into Libya and Syria and the fact that Libya is gold. Where did that go? I mean, there's just so, it's the amount of money and the riches from...
They're looking increasingly like pirate raids. I mean, this is something which I should say has surprised me. I didn't think that at the time. But it looks like, you know, you go into a country, you come up with all kinds of, you know, humanitarian rhetoric to justify you're invading it. You invade it and then you despoil it. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's shattered or broken afterwards. But what you're really all about is making yourself rich. Not obviously, when I say rich, I don't mean the people of the United States. I don't mean the people in Britain. I don't mean the people whose sons and daughters have to go out in the military and do these things. I'm talking about the people who are behind these walls. And this is something which I confess I'd only come to realize very recently. It took Russiagate and the investigations that have followed Russiagate to open all that up. But now we're seeing it in much more detail than we've ever seen it before.
Yeah, that is why Trump is such a dangerous person to all these globalists and neoliberals and these elitists, is because all the masks are coming off, and Trump has a talent for exposing all of this, the swamp.
The important thing to understand about Donald Trump, and it's something that I had not appreciated until recently, and it has surprised me again, the extent to which it is the case, given that he works, he's built up his business in the hospitality and construction industries, which are frankly not for the squeamish, is that he is in no sense a corrupt man, and nor is any member of his family. Now, in a country, in a place where everyone is corrupt, the person who is not corrupt is hated and feared by all the others. That is an iron rule. I mean, I can remember this very well when I lived for a time, when I went and thought of doing a business in a certain country, I'm not going to name it, and I decided that it was simply impossible because there was corruption everywhere, and that if I tried to work there as an honest person, I would very, very quickly get into trouble. And it seems to me that Donald Trump, because he is not corrupt, is feared and hated by the ones who are. And of course, he opposes these wars because, as he is not a corrupt man, he has no interest in them, no personal interest in them. And he sees that they're not good for the United States. So that's the difference. That, I think, explains a lot of the hostility to him. It's taken the investigations that have been directed at him. Oddly enough, they've had that effect. They've established conclusively that neither Donald Trump nor his son, Donald Trump Jr., are in any way corrupt at all.
Yeah, well said. All right, we will leave it there. Alexander, thank you very much. Guys, check us out on BitChute on Odyssey. Also, go to our Discord server. Our Discord server, you'll find a link in the description box down below, has all the information of everything. Plus, it has chats on politics, geopolitics in there as well. And everyone's chatting and talking about stuff. And you get notifications all the time when we put up something new. You always get the notification no matter what. So every time a video goes up, you will be notified when you're joined into the Discord server as well. And please subscribe to us on Subscribestar and also Patreon. We're going to be putting out all kinds of content and ebooks and all kinds of great things, discounts to the shop when you're subscribed to us there. And your help is greatly, greatly appreciated, because when we do videos like this, we run the risk that they're going to come down hard on us. But it's just really hard to not report this stuff, because the world can't take another 4 years of these wars. And that's exactly what a Biden-Harris, even a Harris presidency, is going to do. We're going to end up in a lot more wars, and it's just going to be an awful nightmare.
Absolutely right. That's exactly so. And that's why we continue to make these programs, though doing so is not easy, not easy at all. Can I just also again quickly remind our viewers of our shop and our wonderful things there, our amazing magic mugs, this one with the flag of the United States, which you see there. You see that I'm wearing a shirt, one of our amazing t-shirts, but this is, comes with the flag of the United Kingdom. And we've got hats like this one, and this has got the flag of Britain. And we've got hats and mugs and shirts and hoodies with the flags of many countries. So if you come to our shop, you can find all of those. They're of the highest quality. The feedback we get from about them is amazing. And you support our channel by coming and buying from our shop in that way.
Do you have a patriotic legacy there?
I certainly do.
Here all right. And there is a contest that we're running for the patriotic legacy very quickly. It's you get 20% off when you go to the patriotic legacy website. The contest is for a Black Patriot Beacon 3, that exact flashlight, not the one that Alexander has right now with them, but the same one. And you also get a Duran shirt. If you win the contest, you get the Black Duran shirt with our logo on it right here. So you'll be seeing a picture of that right now on your screen. That is the new contest for the Patriotic Legacy Beacon 3 that we are running. 20% off Duran 20.
Indeed, the best flashlight in the world, bar none, made in the United States, ships internationally. As it's a beautiful flashlight, incredibly powerful beam. You can have it at various strengths. You can have it flashing too. It's got a compass in the handle. It's solar powered, so it never it's always there for you. You can use it as a tool. You can use it as a hammer. You can cut people's out of their seat belts because you've got a seat belt cutter there. And it's even got an alarm, so this is the alarm. You can have the alarm, and it makes this extraordinary, wonderful noise which attracts people, including my dogs, by the way. So the other thing about it is that it is beautifully made. It looks phenomenal. And when you hold it in your hand, you know that you're holding the best flashlight in the world because it is so well crafted. It is indisputably the best. And Alex is absolutely right. You can get yourself a Patriot Beacon 3, but not this one, not the specific one, because it's mine and I will not part with it because it's such a great flashlight.
All right, guys, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Alexander Bray-Curse. Take care, everybody.